Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Lanzalone Show, and I am very excited today. I'm sure, Dave, you have been on the show more than anyone else, so welcome back. Dave DeCamp, news editor of Antiwar.com, host of Antiwar News. How you doing?
I'm good, Kyle, and it's an honor to be the most frequent reoccurring guest on here.
Absolutely. You, Kelly Blahos, Dan McAdams, love to have you guys on and talk about whatever's happening at any given time, because I know you're covering it all. We could break it all down. And Dave, I got a wide range of subjects I wanted to get into you about today. Excuse me. First up, the Pentagon to use Kurt's legacy. America buys nuclear fuel from Russia. Trump wants Bagram back. And Netanyahu says no Palestinian state. So before we get to the first topic, I do want to remind people to share the show. If you're watching on X, just repost it. If you're over on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the channel. Leave us a comment, questions, anything like that. We'll try to get to it. So, Dave, this first story is almost unbelievable. Actually, every day you write something that's almost unbelievable. But this one was particularly shocking to me. U.S. War Department considers using Charlie Kurt's assassination for a military recruitment campaign. So, Dave, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, so this is based on a report from NBC News, and essentially it says that the Pentagon, the War Department, wants to capitalize on Kurt's death by launching a recruiting campaign and actually using Turning Point USA, his organization that has chapters at colleges across the country, as recruitment centers. Now, it's not clear how far this plan has gotten, if Turning Point USA is on board for it or anything, but it's a conversation that's happening within the Pentagon. They did quote, they did say that there are some officials against it, you know, because essentially saying that, yeah, people would view this as us capitalizing again off of Kirk's assassination. But yeah, I mean, it would be something if they tried to use these chapters again, because he really built up this huge organization that has a big infrastructure, and they're trying to figure out if they could use it to their benefit to recruit more young men to send overseas. And in a statement to NBC News, the Pentagon, they didn't exactly deny it, but they appeared to say that the report was a lie. But we've already seen some capital, like them using his death. The thing I mentioned in that story was Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War now. And I mean, if you look at his social media, if the press releases from the Pentagon, I mean, it's been almost cartoonish, this kind of new rebrand as the War Department, saying, you know, using just kind of the term war all the time now. But he posted a video of him praying the Our Father, or the Lord's Prayer, for Charlie Kirk, to like a montage of U.S. military equipment being used, missiles being fired, tanks and bombers and fighter jets flying, which I thought was just really gross to me as a Christian myself. And I saw many other Christians had that same reaction. But you see them, you know, trying to kind of capitalize on it and use it to kind of pump up their image as, you know, the War Department, and Hegseth's kind of his Christian image, which is a Zionist Christianity that he tries to put forward.
So, Dave, I just want to ask, was Charlie Kirk in the military, or is there any particular reason they're trying to hijack his legacy?
No, he was not in the military. And I looked into it. Apparently, he tried to get into West Point and didn't get in. But that's as far as he went. But despite that, they want to use this to get more, you know, to send more young men into war. You know, that's what they're thinking, I guess.
So, Dave, we do have that headset clip that you were talking about before. I just want to play for the audience because it's really, really astounding. Chris, can we play this?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen.
So, Dave, I know that you're a man of faith to some degree. I just wonder what you make of using the Lord's Prayer in this way.
I mean, like I said, it's just really sickening to me, especially, you know, considering everything that I cover, that the U.S. empire and the military is involved in these days, especially when it comes to supporting Israel. And we recently just went to war with Iran on their behalf. And even, I mean, the prayer, I mean, what are you asking God for in that prayer? For forgiveness and for mercy? And you're saying, and like we're supposed to show on other people. And, you know, as they're conducting this new campaign where they're just blowing boats out of the water in Latin America. And this is something J.D. Vance, who is a Catholic, and I'm a Catholic, and J.D. Vance is all about this new policy of extrajudicial executions at sea, as if this is, you know, some kind of Christian principle. So it's pretty repulsive to me. And from what I've seen, a lot of other Catholics and Christians.
So, Dave, while we're on the subject of Charlie Kirk's legacy, I guess when his assassination happened, I really didn't expect that me and you would be maybe covering it that much. But one of the big narratives around Charlie Kirk's assassination has kind of been two different things. There have been people, I see without any evidence whatsoever, asserting that Israel had some kind of role in Charlie Kirk's assassination. And also other people, I think, having a important debate on Charlie Kirk's legacy as related to Israel. Certainly, he seems to me to have been a Zionist up until his last days. At the same time, he doesn't quite seem to be Ben Shapiro, but I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on how the death of a conservative political influencer and activist who certainly, I think, spent most of his time talking about domestic issues, talking about abortion, faith in the direction this country needs to go, not necessarily always weighing in on foreign policy, that it seems to me in the wake of his death that this is really the part of his legacy that's getting the most debate. What do you think about this?
Yeah, well, I think it's kind of part of the civil war that's happening on the American right in general with over Israel, because there is this big kind of reckoning taking place, especially with, you know, you see Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens kind of leading the anti-Israel side or people who are at least skeptical of this special relationship with Israel. So after Kirk was killed in that very brutal way, I mean, you saw Netanyahu and even Smotrich and Ben-Gavir, like the worst elements of the Israeli government, trying to kind of co-opt his death to push their cause. So I think it is good to have the conversation about what Kirk was thinking about Israel in his final days, because, you know, as you said, he always, to me, I didn't really follow him closely. But as far as I knew, you know, he was a pretty committed Zionist. You know, like, I don't know much really about his faith, if it was kind of this specific Christian Zionism that we see Mike Huckabee espousing over in Israel, or if it was more kind of a default position he had, like as a conservative in the U.S. said, okay, this is our side. We're pro-Israel. The left is pro-Palestine. So this is my side here. But there certainly were signs that he was questioning things. There was an interview with Megyn Kelly where he said something to the effect of, like, you know, he was expressing that he was upset that he couldn't criticize Israel without getting all this pushback from people. At the same time, you know, he had like a rabbi on pretty recently to claim that there was no starvation in Gaza. But he also had Dave Smith at the Turning Point USA event, the big event that they do, which I thought that was pretty significant. He debated, what's his name, Josh Hammer, who he's really one of the worst. I mean, you know, Ben Shapiro levels of just, you know, love and support for Israel no matter what. So it's all interesting. I think it's a good conversation to have. And, you know, it's kind of interesting the way it's playing out. But I really do see this as overall as part of this reckoning that's happening, that needs to happen on, you know, among conservatives. Because I think the default position, as I kind of said, like, if you're just a typical Republican voter, you consider yourself a conservative in the U.S., for the longest time, it was, yeah, I'm pro-Israel. You know, they're on our side and all that. But now, after nearly 2 years of this slaughter and genocide in Gaza, you know, people don't want anything. You know, there's just people who might have been pro-Israel by default who just don't want anything to do with it anymore. And then they see Tucker Carlson really questioning it, and you know, it's really causing a change on that side of the aisle in U.S. politics.
Yeah, I mean, if Charlie Kurtz's goal was just to promote the Israeli narrative, I don't think he would have had Dave Smith, who, I mean, as far as I could tell, is absolutely the most effective debater in the U.S. from a pro-Palestinian or anti-aid to Israel perspective. I mean, he you know, there may be people who know more, but as far as just being able to communicate, speak well, generally understanding, you know, good strategies and tactics in debate, Dave's fantastic. And he already crushed Josh Hammer in a debate prior. I think he, you know, the results of that one were like 90-10 or something absurd like that. And so, you know, Charlie Kurtz certainly didn't do the pro-Zionist side any favors by matching up those two together, which I thought was at least worth noting. Now, one more thing on the Charlie Kirk assassination, Dave, is there's another way this is being used, and I think it's for general censorship. So I want to play this clip of Trump speaking at Charlie Kirk's memorial.
Charlie Kirk truly was. He was a missionary with a noble spirit and a great, great purpose. He did not hate his opponents. He wanted the best for them. That's where I disagreed with Charlie. I hate my opponent, and I don't want the best for them. I'm sorry. I am sorry, Erica.
So, Dave, once again, after the death of Charlie Kirk, I don't necessarily think, oh, crackdown is coming and we should worry about it being in the anti-interventionist camp. But if you look at how things have developed, it seems that there is more censorship and crackdowns on political thought coming. And the one group that always seems to be targeted by the Trump administration is the people who are critical of Israel or pro-Palestinian. So are you concerned about this?
Yeah, I am, because we see there's this, it looks like Trump's going to sign some sort of order when it comes to Antifa and declaring them a terrorist organization. Not really sure what legal definition, if there is really a legal way for them to do that. And obviously, I have no love for Antifa or people that, you know, go around the country and destroy private businesses in response to the police killing someone. But it concerns me because we know that Marco Rubio, all the people at the upper levels of the Trump administration, we know what they think of people who are against it, who are critical of Israel. They, you know, call them terrorists and Hamas supporters because of their opinions that go against theirs. So, yeah, I'm concerned about us potentially, you know, critics of Israel getting swept up in this potential crackdown that seems to be coming.
Absolutely. Dave, I want to move on and talk to you next about the situation, the war in Ukraine. This is a clip of Donald Trump being asked about the U.S. continuing to buy nuclear fuel from Russia.
you've been calling on Europe to stop buying Russian oil. The U.S. has imported $755 million worth of Russian uranium and plutonium so far just this year. That's up from the Biden administration last year, about $100 million. Can you ask Europe to cut off purchasing those kinds of products?
Doug, do you know anything about that?
Absolutely, but this goes back not only drill baby drill, but we've got a mine baby mine. We allowed ourselves to fall into under dependence of both China and Russia for critical minerals. America buying uranium from Russia is not acceptable, and so we're working very hard, Secretary of Energy Chris Wright, myself, to make sure that we've got a plan so that the United States can get back into domestic enriched uranium production as quickly as possible.
So, Dave, I think this is so important, and it doesn't get enough attention, that throughout this conflict, the U.S. and Europe and even Ukraine have retained these financial and trade ties with Russia. And yet we're told that we have to, you know, dump all this money into Ukraine. So your thoughts on this?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It didn't seem like Trump really knew what anything about that, that question about the uranium fuel. And that is an important point. I mean, I think it was relatively recently that they shut down the natural gas that was going from Russia to Europe. I forget exactly when, but for most of the war, Russia was still transporting gas through Ukraine, and Ukraine was making money on it. And that was one reason why they were so opposed to the Nord Stream pipelines, is that this is before the war. It would have really reduced the revenue that Ukraine got from transporting Russian gas. And that was there was a big lobby push by the Ukrainian state gas company in the U.S. to oppose Nord Stream. It is an interesting factor here. But as a war, I mean, they just keep threatening sanctions and more military aid as if that's going to change anything. But unfortunately, right now, it just seems like the war is going to go on.
So if the war goes on, where do you think Trump goes next as far? Because he's going to receive a lot of pressure to do something against Russia or for Ukraine. And so what do you think we're going to do? You think I guess he could do both. He could do neither, of course. But it does seem like there's going to be a lot of pressure for him to send weapons to Ukraine and for him to start tariffing U.S. Russian trading partners, particularly India and China. I know there's a bill in the Senate that has 80 co-sponsors, just an unbelievable number. And if Trump says yes, they're going to pass it, and it would place a 500% tariff on India, China, and I believe they've even floated Brazil in this. So I guess, is Trump prepared to blow up the U.S. kind of economic world order and expel Brazil, India, and China, and basically cut off a significant portion of trade with those countries in order to punish Russia? I mean, this seems absurd, but it seems to be the road we're going down.
Yeah. I mean, I have to think that Trump or people in the administration understand that's not really like a realistic option for the U.S. to potentially blow up our own economy to do something that they have to know isn't going to end the war. But then you see the Senate, and, you know, you see the attitude of, it's similar to the attitude among like the European leaders and in NATO and everything, who just want this to go on and want to increase sanctions and send more military aid. And they claim that Ukraine's going to win. And you see Keith Kellogg, who is Trump's special envoy to Ukraine, who's pushing this idea that Ukraine's going to win. He said the other day recently that the U.S. could kick Russia's ass if it needed to. So, I mean, it depends on, I guess, who he's listening to. I mean, Lindsey Graham does seem to be influential on Trump. And, you know, if he's listening to Graham and Kellogg, I guess there's a chance that they could go ahead with these big tariffs. But I would be surprised. They might do something on a smaller scale, kind of a symbolic thing, once they totally give up on the peace process, which doesn't seem to be going anywhere at this point.
Absolutely, Dave. We have a large live audience right now, over 1,000 people watching live. So if you are, help us get it out there to a few more people. Hit the repost button over on Etsy. If you're on YouTube, share it out. Make sure you subscribe to the show. Give it a thumbs up. Let us know any comments, what you think about the show. The chat's been active. I really appreciate that. Before we move on to the next subject, Dave, I do want to mention the sponsor of today's program, and that is the Etsy Money Summit 2025. This is an online event. It's hosted annually by Mikhail Thorpe, who is the host of the Expat Money Show. And at the Expat Money Summit, you could figure out how to craft your perfect plan B. If you want to buy property in another country, where is that? Where can you legally do that? Whenever it comes to taxes and how all that works, you'll get information on that. Getting a second passport. All these things could be absolutely crucial in the years to come, as it looks like we're going to face more and more crackdowns here in the U.S. And, our standing on the global stage is diminishing. So if you want to, you could get a free ticket for the event at expatmoneysummit.com. Now, they do have a VIP section of that event. I will be on the panel along with the great guest today, Dave DeCamp, and we'll be talking some foreign policy there. So if you want to get access to that discussion and many other VIP panels at the Expat Money Summit, head on over to expatmoneysummit.com and use the promo code Kyle, K-Y-L-E, when you check out. Again, you get free ticket just to attend the event, but if you want a few extra panels and things like that, get the VIP ticket and use my promo code, and you'll be able to see me and Dave talk some foreign policy there. Now, Dave, speaking of things that are just absolutely absurd, last week, I couldn't believe it. I had to watch the clip like four times before I wrote up this article, because could he really be talking about this? Donald Trump is talking about going back to the Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. So Trump initially, I believe it's on Friday, along with Keir Starmer, he's in the UK, says, I got some breaking news for you. We're thinking about going back to Bagram. And then he has a Truth Social post where he includes what seems to be a threat that we want it back. We want it back quickly, and they better give it back to us. Very concerning. And then today we got the response from the Taliban. So I want to play this clip and then get your thoughts, Dave.
Those individuals who were responsible for bringing foreign entities here, who unjustly imposed them upon our nation, and who arrogantly desired to rule our people by sheer force and coercion, they were, in essence, nothing more than cowards. Out of their profound fear and lack of conviction, they shamefully sought refuge and protection with the infidels. But we, relying solely and completely on the boundless strength and unwavering support of Almighty Allah, fear no one, no oppressive regime or tyrannical bully. And we have demonstrably proven this truth time and time again. In the course of 20 arduous and challenging years of relentless jihad against the foreign occupation, specifically against America and its various allies, we have unequivocally shown the entire world that we are never, ever afraid to stand for what is right and just.
So, Dave, what do you think? Is Trump about to restart the Afghan war? Which, just to remind everybody, the one war that his supporters actually claim that he ended is the Afghan war. So is he just going to restart this thing?
Well, what's interesting is that this is something he actually did mention when he was on the campaign trail last year. Mm-hmm. I remember at least twice. And he actually said at one point that he wouldn't have left Bagram Air Base, essentially saying he wouldn't have withdrawn from Afghanistan, even though he was the one who signed the deal with the Taliban that led to the withdrawal. And it was the same. It's like the same things like in his, he grabs like the same information in his brain. In that clip, he said, oh, we didn't want to leave Bagram because it had nothing to do with Afghanistan. It's an hour away from where China makes its nuclear weapons. And I know it's near China. I don't know if that claim is right, but then he said the same thing the other day when he was in the UK. And then the Taliban did initially respond and say, you know, that's not going to happen, because he made it sound like there was some kind of talks going on, that there was going to be some kind of diplomatic deal that would see the US return to Bagram. So then he responded saying, oh, there's going to be, you know, consequences, or, you know, it's not going to be good if we don't get that base back. So realistically, is the US actually going to reinvade Afghanistan? I mean, I don't see any scenario where that happens, but apparently this seems like something that Trump might want. Maybe they'll see if they can give the Taliban something, but it doesn't seem like they're going to go for this. So I'm kind of hoping that this is like the Greenland thing and the Panama Canal, and that it kind of, although the Panama Canal, I mean, that might have something to do with some of the deployments we're seeing in the region. But you know, we've heard a lot less about Greenland after for a while Trump was talking about the U.S. taking it. So I'm hoping this idea kind of fizzles out. But this isn't really anything new. This is something Trump has kind of said before. And I remember actually, I don't know if it was a debate or a campaign event, and he actually said something about Bagram, and he said, "We're going to take it back. We're going to take it back." And I thought, there's no way. Like, is he really saying he's going to try to retake Bagram Air Base? But I guess, you know, it is something that's been on his mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one thing that really concerns me about this, Dave, is it just seems unbelievably stupid. The Bagram Air Base is remote. It's fairly high altitude. I know it's very difficult to get supplies up there. It's difficult to land planes there. And Trump said, well, it's important because it's close to Chinese nuclear facilities. And so is he saying that we need an air base in Afghanistan in case we ever need to bomb China's nuclear facilities? I mean, that's very provocative and very concerning if that's what he's thinking. If it's intelligence collection, I mean, I'm sure we fly spy planes out of Pakistan that could easily cross into Afghan airspace and do whatever operations you're going to do out of Bagram. Or satellites is probably the main way that they obtain all this information anyways. And so I just, when he says something like this, it concerns me because it seems to be logistically impossible. And if he tried to do it, it would just strand 10,000 American troops in enemy territory where they're hard to resupply. It's hard to get them in and out. It's hard to land the planes. They're going to need constant maintenance, food, all kinds of supplies coming in. I mean, this is the kind of thing where it really raises some red flags. Is Trump okay? I mean, like, what the hell is the plan here?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I really don't think this is going to turn into that. I mean, I can't imagine that even in the Pentagon, this is something that they want to do because of all those things that you mentioned. So I don't know. We'll see if this goes anywhere. Again, I hope, and I have a feeling that he might drop it. But we will see. I mean, maybe there are some kind of back channel. They haven't been back channel. The U.S. officials have gone over to Afghanistan and met with Taliban officials about getting Americans held in jail free, and some people have been freed. So there has been talks between the Trump administration and the Taliban. So maybe this is something they've tried to float diplomatically. But again, I just don't see any scenario where the U.S. is going to try to take Bagram by force. I mean, just look at the map. Like, you can't just go in there and grab it and hold it. And as you mentioned, yeah, what is the implication there that, oh, you know, we need to be close to where China makes its nuclear weapons? Are we going to try to blow them up or something? You know, and I'm sure that when it comes to the plans for like a buildup around China, they probably would like to have bases in Afghanistan again. But I think logistically, it's just too hard for them to actually try.
Well, Dave, I just want to ask you real quick about one more policy that seems impossibly stupid, and that's Venezuela. Trump has now said he carried out three strikes against boats. I'm not sure if they were all in Venezuelan territorial waters or outside of it, but I wanted to get kind of your thoughts on how far do you think we could see that ratchet up in the next few weeks?
Yeah, so I mean, this is something that's become almost a regular thing now. They bomb a boat every week or so. It seems like it started on September 2nd, and there's been at least three. There might have been four boats. It's kind of confusing because they announced two, and then Trump said, oh, we actually bombed the third boat. We just didn't announce it. And then a few days later, he announced another one. So some places are reporting that that was the fourth boat that was bombed, but it could be the third one that Trump talked about earlier. And I hope that's not too confusing, but it does seem like they want to make, you know, they set the precedent with the first one and they want to make this a regular thing. And of course the real risk here is, I mean, obviously besides the immorality of doing this, of just blowing people up like this, the risk is this being angled into some sort of regime change war with Venezuela, or there's the potential for them to launch direct strikes in Venezuela, which I think, you know, would turn into war. You know, it's tough to really say, I mean, where this is going. It's like, you know, I wouldn't have really expected them to actually start bombing boats like this, but they did. And now I still find it hard to believe that they might actually launch strikes in Venezuela. But I mean, at this point, it, you know, wouldn't surprise me if we see that.
Yeah, unfortunately, I agree with you there. Now, we have almost 2,000 people watching this episode live, Dave. So that's a pretty big audience. I'm happy that everybody is tuning in. Very active chat. So, you know, in comments, we're happy if you drop them in the YouTube chat. While you're there, subscribe to the channel, share it out. And if you're watching on Etch, just hit the repost button. Help us out that way. Now, Dave, before I let you go, I got one more clip. This one is Benjamin Netanyahu discussing how there's never going to be a two-state solution.
We will have to fight both at the UN and in all other arenas against the false propaganda directed at us and the calls for the establishment of a Palestinian state, which would endanger our existence and serve as an absurd reward for terrorism. The international community will hear from us on this matter in the coming days.
So, Dave, my question for you with this clip is just for years and years and years, we've always heard that the plan here is that we need to support Israel. So we have the creation of a two-state solution. Eventually, there's going to be a Palestinian state. It seems like a big omission from Netanyahu just outright coming out and saying, I have prevented one and I am never going to allow one. So what do you think of Netanyahu's comments here?
Yeah, I mean, this has been his talking point now over the past year or so. He's just been openly saying, you know, that I've been working to prevent a Palestinian state, and I've done so successfully. Recently, he was at a settlement, and I believe he said, you know, I fulfilled the promise that I made to you 20 years ago that there would never be a Palestinian state. So now it is openly the policy of the Israeli government to prevent that, and the U.S., especially the current administration, is going along with it. Now, the big question is, how is he going to respond to all these countries recognizing a Palestinian state? There's all these reports, and we see comments from Smotrich and Ben-Gvir that they want to annex parts of the West Bank. Smotrich announced a plan. I forget exactly the wording that he used, but he said it's like how to get the most land with as few Arabs as possible. Basically, they would annex all of the West Bank except for six major Palestinian cities and leave them kind of isolated as islands. Netanyahu's saying that he's going to announce his response when he gets back from the U.S., and that's because he is most likely going to try to get support from Trump for whatever it is that he wants to do. Huckabee has said that the U.S. will not oppose Israel annexing the West Bank, but I think Trump would probably want something more than that. He would probably want real support from the U.S. in some sort of way, or some kind of commitment to continue support and military aid, you know, to help them in this endeavor. And judging by everything that's happened so far, I wouldn't be surprised if the U.S. just openly backs something like that. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, there's no more illusions about this idea of a Palestinian state at this point.
All right, Dave, thank you for joining me, and thank you for everybody for sharing it out. We did get up over 2,000 people watching live today, so that is a fantastic number. The show is growing. Dave, your work is absolutely essential. You are certainly one of, if not the most important journalists that we have today. Every day, guys, at antiwar.com. 5, 6, 7 articles written by Dave covering events from Venezuela to the Middle East, Ukraine, Taiwan, every single day, everything that you need to know about what's happening. I mean, your daily updates on what's happening in Gaza are absolutely essential for people to understand the truth about the totality of the carnage and just what Israel is inflicting on the poor people that live there. So everybody, be sure to follow all of Dave's work. Read antiwar.com every day. While you're there, his show Anti-War News with Dave DeCamp, and follow him on @DeCampDave. Dave, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Kyle.